Ahakarastadaivasit. Siddhanam divipasyatam. Atoyam manavasuryo. Magna punya janarnave. All the siddhas from the higher planetary systems were observing the fight from the sky. And when they saw that Dhruva Maharaj was being covered by incessant arrows of the enemy, they roared tumultuously, "The grandson of Manu, Dhruva, is now lost." They cried that Dhruva Maharaj was just like the sun, that now he had set within the ocean of the Yakshas. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. In this verse, the word manava is very significant. Generally, this word is used to mean human being. Dhruva Maharaj is also described here as manava. Not only is Dhruva Maharaj a descendant of Manu, but all human society descends from Manu. According to Vedic civilization, Manu is the lawgiver. Even today, Hindus in India follow the laws given by Manu. Everyone, therefore, in human society is a manava, or descendant from Manu. But Dhruva Maharaj is a distinguished manava, because he is a great devotee. The denizens of the planet Siddhaloka, where the residents can fly in the sky without airplanes, were anxious over Dhruva Maharaj's welfare in the battlefield. Srila Rupa Goswami says, therefore, that not only is a devotee well protected by the Supreme Lord, but all the demigods and even ordinary men are anxious for his security and safety. The comparison given here that Dhruva Maharaj appeared to merge in the ocean of the Yakshas is also significant. When the sun sets on the horizon, it appears that the sun drowns in the ocean. But factually, the sun has no difficulty. Similarly, although Dhruva appeared to drown in the ocean of the Yakshas, he had no difficulty. As the sun rises again in due course at the end of night, so Dhruva Maharaj, although he might have been in difficulty, because after all it was a fight, and in any fighting activities there are reverses, that did not mean that he was defeated. Today we are reading from Canto 4 of Srimad Bhagavatam, Chapter 10, entitled Dhruva Maharaja's Fight with the Yakshas, text number 14. This chapter reveals the great devotional attitude of Dhruva Maharaj and how the devotee of the Lord is protected and empowered by the Lord in all circumstances. Dhruva Maharaj returned home from the forest. After some time, Maharaj Uttanapada was so pleased to see his divine characteristics, his great love for Krishna, his compassion to other living beings, his willingness and ability to control his senses and follow religious principles very carefully, and his capacity to lead others on the path of Dharma. With the blessings and permission of the ministers, the Brahmins, the Vaishnavas, Uttanapada coronated Dhruva Maharaj as king. And then he left for the forest to live a simple life of a vanaprastha. When a great king like Uttanapada leaves his kingdom for the forest, It is not out of frustration. Some people give up their material environment due to frustration. But he had very little frustration. His son was well behaved. His wife was cooperative, chaste, and faithful. The whole kingdom was respectful to him and was willing to follow his direction. He had no financial difficulties. He left the most ideal material situation a person could ever dream to have, because he understood that eventually it's all going to be lost anyway. It is all a product of the illusory energy. The only reality is the soul's relationship with Krishna. And to understand that reality is self-realization. So he left for the forest to seek the highest goal of life. Srila Prabhupada explains in this regard that it appears that Dhruva Maharaj was married after Uttanapada left for the forest. He actually got married after he was king, which is not the ordinary series of events amongst great kings like Uttanapada. It is one of the most important responsibilities of a man to see to it that their children are properly married. So how is it that he left home before even doing that? Srila Prabhupada explains, because he understood that there was nothing more important than self-realization or Krishna consciousness. That it has the greatest priority over every other consideration. In family life, marrying your children is a very important consideration, especially in the Vedic system. Nowadays, the Western culture, the parents really have very little or nothing to do with marrying children. But in the traditional sense, the religious sense, it was the parents' responsibility. They had very much to do with such a decision. In fact, Srila Prabhupada explained that when his sister was just a very young girl, hardly in her teens, her mother, Srila Prabhupada's mother, she was actually thinking she should commit suicide because she failed as a mother, because her daughter was still not married. Hare Krishna. So that was only about 100 years ago. Not even. Now we're talking about several yugas back, when people were really strict about following these traditions. Uttanapada had faith in Krishna, because he knew he was going to the forest to surrender to Krishna wholeheartedly. Krishna would take care of all of these things. He had that faith. And therefore he left. Similarly, Srila Prabhupada, when he took his vanaprast, some of his children were not married. But he understood that the priority above all other considerations is the mission of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. There was nobody spreading the holy name all over the world. And he understood that his Guru Maharaj was calling upon him to do that. Therefore, that was the first consideration. Because of Prabhupada's surrender, his children are all going to go back to Godhead. So real compassion means to understand, you know, what are the real needs? There is the body, there is the mind, there's the soul. And the needs of the soul take precedence over the needs of the body and the mind. So Uttanapada left and Dhruva Maharaj became king. He married, he had children. He was ruling the state as a real Raja Rishi, saintly king. What was the nature of his saintly qualities is described here. If you remember when he was a child of only 5, how much he was insulted by his stepmother Suruchi. how much he was minimized in the presence of his brother Uttama. Uttama was sitting and playing with his father on lap in the throne. Dhruva Maharaj just wanted to come and participate. And he was forbidden to ascend to his father's lap. So Uttama was just playing nicely. And Dhruva Maharaj, out of broken heart, full of vengeance, he went to the forest. He was very angry. However, due to the grace of Narada Muni, he practiced the path of pure devotional service. When his heart became pure, his entire consciousness was transformed. He wanted to get revenge by getting a greater kingdom than his parent and grandparents. But after tasting the nectar of Krishna consciousness, he didn't want these things. Like Jamunacharya, he prayed, "When I think of material sense gratification, even at the highest, I spit at the thought." Dhruva Maharaj was on that level. He was tasting the nectar of devotion. Param drishtva nivartate. But the Lord told him to go and be king as a service, which he did. Uttama was not even married. He went to the forest on a hunting excursion and was killed by a person of the dynasty of the Yakshas. Uttama's mother could not bear the death of her son, so she also gave up her life. Dhruva Maharaj, he had already forgiven with such affection his stepmother and his brother. He had such great affection, respect, and love for them that he lamented terribly over the death of his brother and stepmother. And as a king, he was also as angry as fire to serve justice. Now, some people who are less intelligent, they think if Dhruva Maharaj was such a great personality, self-realized soul, then why was he experiencing lamentation and anger? These are the qualities of materialistic people who are attached. But Srila Prabhupada explains that great devotees, they experience lamentation and anger. But not simply due to some physical bodily attachment. It is connected to Krishna. They use it in Krishna's service. If you love someone, there is lamentation. This is a wonderful, wonderful subject to discuss. I have explained one instance on many occasions where one professor challenged Srila Prabhupada in this regard, regarding Arjuna. Asochan anvasochastvam. Krishna tells Arjuna that you are a nonsense person. Wise men are not supposed to lament for the living or the dead. Why you are lamenting? Chastised him. He also explained that the non-permanent appearance of happiness and distress and its disappearance in due course are like the coming and going of the winter and summer seasons. They arise from sense perception, O Skaina Bharat. One should not be disturbed by these things. So why, after becoming a self-realized devotee, Arjuna, who was glorified as a personality who attained the highest perfection of life by his friendship with Krishna, why he lamented and also was very angry when his son Abhimanyu was killed? He was lamenting so much, he was weeping, he was crying, he was trembling, and he made a vow that this Jayadratha, he will be slain by my arrows, by the time the sun sets tomorrow, or I will enter fire. So this professor questioned Prabhupada, why were you so angry and so much lamenting if he was such a great soul? Prabhupada said it is natural. A devotee, close loved one, if he dies, then he laments. It's natural. Devotees don't become stone-hearted. Rather, they become soft-hearted. But the fact was that he did not give up his service. What Krishna condemned Arjuna for in the beginning of Gita is he was going to give up his devotional service, his duty to the Lord, on the basis of his lamentation. But Krishna convinced him to carry on his service, understanding the principle of the eternal soul. So Prabhupada explained, he carried out his service. It was not disturbed. Therefore, he is Dhira. And ultimately, he was on the transcendental platform. But still, while living on this platform, there are certain things that are just the conventions of living in this world. Great souls, sometimes they have to go to respond to nature's calls. Sometimes they have to eat. They take bath to keep good hygiene. These are the conventions of the world, even for the great souls. Similarly, it is a convention of the world. When a loved one dies, you cry, you lament. Family member. But you don't lose your intelligence. You understand that the soul is eternal. You just miss the person. The soul's eternal, but he's gone to another body. So there's not, when a materialist laments, it's in ignorance. When someone dies, they don't know where that person, they feel that that person's just gone. Ceases to exist. Or maybe he exists somewhere, but I don't know. But a devotee is in full consciousness that this person is the eternal soul, and according to his particular karma or devotion, he's going to be elevated or degraded. But still, this person was my companion, and Krishna's taken him away, so I accept that as the mercy of the Lord. But still, we lament because we love the person. We have affection for the person. So that is the convention of living in this world. And when there is injustice, sometimes there is anger. Arjuna was anger. In fact, Prabhupada said, Krishna personally cited anger in Arjuna. Incited. Incited anger. Because you can't fight without being angry. Did you ever try to fight without being angry? You can't win, because there's no incentive. So for Kshatriya, anger is very important. But it's controlled anger. It's not anger that is simply based on our ego or our uncontrolled desires being frustrated. It is a tool to be used for the service of the Lord. So Dhruva Maharaj was angry. And he single-handedly, he was such a brave personality. He just by himself, it appears, he just went on his chariot. He was driving his own chariot too. And he went to the Alakapur, the city of the Yakshas in the Himalayan mountains. Prabhupada explains that the acharyas indicate that this is in the area of Tibet. And he blew his conch shell. He was so ferocious that when he blew his conch shell, the entire city of the Yakshas was trembling in fear. peoples, these, the Yakshas, are powerful warriors. They're devotees of Lord Shiva. They have mystic powers. And they're a warrior class. They're fearless people. But the conch shell of Dhruva just caused them to tremble in fear. Can you imagine the sound of that conch shell? It was intolerable to them. It was just so loud, it was resounding everywhere. They couldn't tolerate. Sometimes before aartis, we blow conch shell. And some of our devotees, they really blow nice conch shells. Even if they blow as hard as they can, the most is some devotees think he's blowing too loud. But can you imagine what this must have sounded? What was the power of Dhruva Maharaj? That his conch shell could go miles and miles and miles of distance and completely disrupt an entire city, an entire nation of people. So they understood that this means war. So they came out as angry as anything, ready to fight. Dhruva Maharaj was shooting 3 arrows at a time. He was severing the heads of so many Yakshas. So the Yakshas were very, very good fighters. So to counteract, there was 130,000 against one. This was the proportions of the battle. Yakshas, 130,000 at once came out, and Dhruva was alone. And each one of those 130,000 was shooting 6 arrows at a time. For those of you who are mathematicians, how many arrows were coming at Dhruva at a time? 780,000 arrows. And figure they must be about every 30 seconds, they're shooting another 780,000. And then another 30 seconds, another. There were tens and millions of arrows coming at Dhruva Maharaj. So many arrows that the arrows were like a dark cloud that you couldn't even see through. And Dhruva Maharaj was covered by that dark cloud of arrows. Nobody could see him. Nobody knew where Dhruva was, if he was even existing. Who could survive tens and millions of arrows coming at you at one time? So we find the denizens of the higher planets, such as Siddhaloka. When the people of Siddhaloka are concerned, that's a serious subject matter. Because they all have the 8 cities. And they knew that Dhruva Maharaj was a powerful person. But they were really worried that he's been slain. They were crying out, "Ha ha, Kara!" A tumult of disappointment. And he began to say, "This grandson of Manu, Dhruva, is now lost." They cried out that Dhruva Maharaj was just like the sun, and that now he had set within the ocean of the Yakshas. Srila Prabhupada, on behalf of our beloved acharyas, is bringing to our attention how they addressed Dhruva as Manava, the descendant of Manu. Actually, every human being is a Manava. a descendant of Manu. And this is interesting. The word man comes from Manava, descendant of Manu. Man means woman too. When Prabhupada says man or he actually explains that it refers to all human beings. Just like the scientists will say the history of man. That includes women. Man means human. Human. They just take the hue away and it's human. So that's man. So why are humans called humans? Because they're descendants of Manu. But this is very, very interesting. They're not genealogically all descendants of Manu. But Manu wrote the Manu Samhita. This is what Prabhupada is explaining here. He is the author of Manu Samhita. Manu Samhita is the law book for humanity. It is the laws of God. Those who choose by their own sweet will to follow the laws of God, they are human. They are descendants of Manu. They are descendants in their willingness to follow. And those who are not willing to follow the laws of God, actually they're not man. By their conscious disposition, they are categorized as two-legged animals. Animalistic civilization. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu explained like this to Rupa Goswami also. That civilized human being is one who follows the laws of the scripture. And those who do not understand and follow those laws, they are not actually human. Atato brahma jigyasa. Human life is meant for self-realization, not meant for sense gratification. Nayam deho deha bhajam dulake kastan kaman arhiti vipujam de. The dogs and the hogs that eat stool, they're enjoying sense gratification. Human life is not meant for that. Tapo divyam putraka yena sadvam. Human life is meant for tapasya. Sudyedyasyam brahma sukyam fanantam. Tapasya that will bring about real happiness based on spiritual realization. So Dhruva Maharaj was the best of the Manavas. He was best of human being. He was Narottam. Why? Because he was a great devotee. Because he was genuinely surrendered to the loving service of the Lord. And for such a great devotee like that to be lost is a very, very great tragedy to the world. We pray on the disappearance day of great acharyas by singing the song of the departed Vaishnavas by Srila Thakur Narottam. Jaya Nilo Premadana. In that song, he says that in the separation of these great personalities, I am beating my stone, my head. I'm beating my head against a stone in the anguish of separation. So one may say, if he's such a transcendental person, why is his soul never dies? Why is he lamenting? This is transcendental lamentation. To feel separation from great souls is a sign of great, great spiritual advancement. It's a sign of love. And Lord Kapila Dev told Devahuti, that the same attachment a person has for the enjoyments of the world, just transfer it to become attached to a great devotee. And you will become perfect. Srila Prabhupada describes in fourth canto that when the spiritual master leaves the world, it's the duty of the disciple to cry bitterly. When Rupa and Sanatan Goswamis left this world, Raghunath Das Goswami wrote such poems, such beautiful prayers describing his grief in separation from them. Grief in separation from Swarup Damodar Goswami, Lord Chaitanya, Rupa and Sanatan. Raghunath Das Goswami, when Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu left, and then Swarup Damodar Goswami, he couldn't stay without the Lord. He disappeared. Raghunath Das decided, I can't live without them. He walked all the way to Vrindavan with the intention of jumping from Govardhan Hill to take his life. But Rupa and Sanatan told him that you should stay with us and you should sing the glories of Gauranga Mahaprabhu every day. We want to hear from you. So just to be in their association, he, every day for at least 3 to 4 hours, he would sit on the banks of Sri Radha Kund and discuss the pastimes and the philosophy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. But then Rupa and Sanatan Goswamis both left the world. So now what is there? But they ordered me to stay. So this ecstasy of separation is the personal substance of the love of a devotee. When Mahaprabhu asked Ramananda Rai, what is the greatest of all sufferings? Ramananda Rai said, there's only one suffering that I know of, to not be in the association of devotees. So here we find Dhruva Maharaj, the greatest of human beings. And the demigods, they are really seriously lamenting that his position as the king of the world is going to be lost. His association is going to be lost. And Prabhupada describes in this purport that not only does the Lord protect his devotees, but even the demigods are concerned about the welfare of the devotees. During Srila Prabhupada's Leela, on several occasions, he became extremely ill, his physical body. And at those times, his secretaries would send the word all over to every temple, to every devotee throughout the world, that Prabhupada may leave his body. He's very ill. Sometimes he would have heart attacks. It wasn't an easy thing to be a disciple when you're hearing about your guru in that situation. And when that would happen, every temple would have 24-hour kirtan. Not just a ritualistic kirtan. But there was I remember on one occasion when Prabhupada was very, very ill, we had a vyasasan, the temple I was staying, with a big photo of Srila Prabhupada on that vyasasan. And everyone was just gathered around that vyasasan, just from the core of their hearts, just crying out the holy name, praying to Krishna, please, we cannot live without Prabhupada. And then Prabhupada would get better.
And he would say it is because of the prayers of the devotees.
So here we find even demigods, even the residents of Siddhaloka, are very concerned with welfare of a devotee. Krishna explains in Gita that his devotee will never perish. Konteya pratijanihi name bhakta pranashati. He protects his devotees because his devotees have surrendered to him. He's all pervading. By his energies, he's the controller of all controllers. Krishna protects his devotees. But how he protects his devotees, that is one of the great mysteries that cannot be understood by mere rational intelligence. We have to understand the science of mercy, the science of rasa, to really have a proper explanation how Krishna protects his devotees. And even after all that, you still cannot understand it. It's something you simply have to accept with faith, that Krishna will always, he will always protect his devotees. In Krishna's own lila, when he would fight against demons, oftentimes he would appear to be losing the battle. Just like when he walked in, when the cowherd boys entered into Agasura, that dark belly of Agasura was so horrible, they all completely lost their consciousness. Similarly, when they drank the water from the lake that Kaliya was residing, they all lost their lives. So sometimes it appears that Krishna just lets his devotees be defeated. But in the end, he makes them victorious. Even Krishna, when he entered Agasura, the demigods were saying, "Alas, alas, Krishna's dead." But Krishna came out very nice, and he brought all of his devotees back to life as well. When he was fighting Hiranyaksha, when he was fighting Hiranyakashipu, even when Ram was fighting Ravana, there were times when it appears that the Lord was being defeated. The acharyas explain, just like a cat plays with a rat. Sometimes the cat lets the rat think that he's going to win, just because it just increases the enjoyment of the cat to play like that. So Krishna, just to increase his enjoyment and to increase the excitement of his devotees, just like in a sporting event, if one team just completely pulverizes another team, everyone just, it's kind of boring. It's not a very action-packed, exciting event. Huh? And people just go away and say, "Oh, they won, very good." But if it's really competitive, and you really want your team to win, and they're losing, and just in the last second they win, everyone says, "Oh, that was a very good game." Because it was exciting. So people like excitement. So Krishna's lila is very exciting. Sometimes he himself stages such an exciting competitive match with Chanura and Mustika. Actually, Lord Narsingadev and Hiranyakashipu, what we read in Bhagavatam just explains the essence. It appears that he just came out of the pillar and killed that wasp. But actually, he appeared around noon. And he didn't kill Hiranyakashipu until sunset. So what does that mean? They were fighting for about 6 or 7 hours. What boxers or wrestlers today fight for 6 or 7 hours? That was really a battle, just one against one. And everyone was in complete excitement. Prahlad knew Narsingadev would win, but everyone else, they didn't know. They were hoping, they were thinking, but it appeared otherwise at times. So just to absorb devotees into the excitement of his lila, Krishna stages such wonderful dramatic performances. And he does the same with his devotees. Because Krishna is present within the heart of his devotees. There is a very good lesson taught by Murari Gupta in this regard. Shall I tell? Murari Gupta was speaking to Damodar Pandit, explaining the lila of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu when he was just a small child. One day, Lord Chaitanya was sitting in his house, and on that day it was very special because his body was emitting such a divine effulgence. The whole house was brilliant with light. On that day, Lord Chaitanya looked upon his mother, Sachi Devi, and spoke with a grave and thunderous voice, although he was only a child. He said, "Mother, please hear what I say. You have committed a great offense. From this day on, you should never, ever eat grains on Ekadasi. This is my order to you. You should obey it." When Sachi Devi saw her son so grave, she was very, in a very soft and gentle voice, she said, "Dear Nimai, I promise throughout my life I will follow this vow." Srila Prabhupada explains that at that time, sometimes amongst Brahmins, the man was considered the person who had to perform all these austerities and these rituals. And the woman, if she just serves the man, she will get all the credit. She doesn't have to do these things. But Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he gave the responsibility to the women also, to the wives of Brahmins also, that they should follow the principles. At that very moment, a very pure-hearted Brahmin came to the house. And out of affection, he gave Nimai some betel nuts. So Nimai ate the betel nuts. And after a few seconds later, he, very grave, he told his mother, "Now I will go home." This pure Brahmin, you should serve him, care for him, and accept him as your own son. "Now I will go home." Then he fell to the ground, motionless, with no symptoms of life. Sachi Devi was thinking that her son was dead. She was greatly alarmed. She was captivated by grief and fear. And she took Ganga water and sprinkled it on him and put that Ganga water in his mouth. And then he came back to consciousness, completely normal. That's the end of the story. So Damodar Pandit is asking Murari Gupta, can you tell me what did he mean? Now I will go home. What is the significance of this? Can you explain? It's very bewildering. Murari Gupta said, no, I can't explain. Nobody can understand the Lord's Leela. But according to my realization, I will explain. And you should have faith in my words. Murari Gupta told that when a devotee, a sincere and pure-hearted devotee, when he is eagerly hearing the message of Krishna, when he's hearing the pastimes of Krishna, when he's seeing with a devoted heart the deity of Krishna, when he's meditating on serving Krishna, when he's chanting the holy names of Krishna, that Krishna is so obliged to that devotee that Krishna makes his home in that devotee's heart. Krishna lives within his devotee. And because Krishna is personally present within a Vaishnava's heart, that devotee's body is Krishna's property. And he accepts it as such. Sadhunam hridayam mayam, sadhunam hridayam tvaham. Krishna says, devotee has surrendered to me, I surrender to my devotee. He knows nothing but me, I know nothing but him. He's given everything for me, I'll give everything for him. Therefore, Murari Gupta explains that the devotee is more dear to Krishna than Krishna is dear to himself. He's obliged to his devotee. He loves his devotee. An offense to a devotee is greater than an offense to the Lord. And service to a devotee is more pleasing to Krishna than service directly to him. This is an eternal truth, that Krishna makes his home within the heart of his devotee. Therefore, how we should respect, serve, and care for the devotees. Therefore, Mahaprabhu, Sri Chaitanya, as little Nimai, he said, I will go home. You take care of this Brahman. He is your son. And he appeared to die. You take care of your devotee, you're taking care of me. If you consider me your son, you should consider him your son, because I have gone home. My home is in his heart. So Krishna, he is always in the heart of his devotee. And therefore, he always protects his devotee. If Krishna lets the devotee die, then the devotee is protected by going back to Godhead. Krishna told Arjuna, if you lose this battle, you'll go back to God. What is the loss? If you win the battle, you'll be king of the world, and you can help everyone go back to God. How Krishna protects his devotee, we cannot always understand. He protected Abhimanyu by having him killed. And he protected Arjuna by giving him victory. But actually, they were both victorious, because they both gave their lives in the service of Krishna. So in this instance, the demigods, they're seeing Dhruva Maharaj. It appears that he's being defeated. It appears that he doesn't have a chance to survive. It appears that the son of Dhruva
has just set in the ocean of the yakshas, which is actually true. However, Prabhupada explains that when the sun sets, the sun is not defeated by the ocean. The sun sets in the ocean, but it's going to rise with its full brilliance. Srila Prabhupada explains, actually the sun can never be covered. When there's dark, dark clouds, it covers the eye, it doesn't cover the sun. It only covers our perception. Similarly, Krishna and his devotee can never be defeated. But it may appear to be so for some time. Let us look at it historically. When Prahlad Maharaj was being thrown off a mountain, it appeared he was defeated. His father had all the strength. He picked him up and threw him, and Prahlad was just falling down. When he was thrown into that pit of venomous snakes, when he was thrown into fire, it appeared that he was being defeated, but he was protected. And by the grace of God, he was victorious. And then we see the Pandavas. Pandavas were banished 12 years. It appears that they actually lost everything. With Prahlad Maharaj, it was just a matter of minutes till he was restored. But with the Pandavas, they lost everything in 12 years. And people with little faith, they may have been getting impatient. Krishna protects his devotees. You know, what kind of devotees are these? Maybe after 1 year or 2 years, but after 10 years, people may have started having their doubts. Can you imagine? Completely defeated, lost, defeated by Duryodhana. He took everything and they had nothing. And they were in that condition for 12 full years. And then there was the battle. And on certain days of the battle, the Pandavas were being severely defeated. Even the story of Jayadrata. It wasn't till the very last second that Krishna saved Arjuna. And that's one of the favorite stories of Mahabharata. If Arjuna would have just come right out in the morning and chopped off the head of Jayadrata, that would have just been one of the thousands of stories of Mahabharata. But so, it was such an exciting event because it was really, it was a good match. Even movies are boring if there's not impossible dangers for the hero to overcome. Yes. So that was Mahabharata. Arjuna appeared to be defeated. But at the very, very, not even the last second, beyond the last second, Krishna just personally performed a miracle and saved Arjuna. And Srila Prabhupada, he went to Jhansi, lost everything. Came to Bombay. Actually, at first, they refused to give him a ticket. It was just defeat after defeat. Was on the Jaladuta, several heart attacks. New York in the Bowery. His typewriter stolen. Life threatened. No results. Appears he was defeated. His mission was a failure. One person of this world with some wisdom said that a successful man is a person who passes through failure after failure after failure after failure and does not give up his enthusiasm. That is the sign of success. It is also said failure is the stepping stone to real success. Defeat is often the stepping stone to real victory. That's the way the world is, and that's the way Krishna deals with his devotees. If we judge things by how they appear at the very immediate instance, then we will be defeated. Whenever there's an obstacle, a crisis, a tragedy, even if it's overwhelming, even if it seems to be impossible that everything is going to be lost, at that moment, on the basis of faith in the Shastra, we have to see that ultimately Krishna has his plan. And we may be thinking, because I have faith in Krishna, he will immediately reverse things and everything will be all right. But with the Pandavas, it was 12 years later that Krishna did it. And it wasn't easy. But Krishna makes his promise and tells Arjuna to declare it boldly, my devotee will never be lost. I will always protect my devotee. Yatra Yogeshwara Krishna, one who is with Krishna will be victorious. But Krishna puts us through many, many reversals, many difficult situations, just to see, is he actually my devotee? If he's actually my devotee, he won't give up. Sometimes physically your body is defeated. Prabhupada had those heart attacks. After his heart attacks, he traveled around the world 13 times. And he was getting heart attacks every now and then, even when he was doing that. What to speak of his other physical disabilities? Krishna can take away all facilities. Krishna can also crush your ego, crush it, pulverize it, powder it, fine granules like dust. Do we give up? If we give up, we're not really his devotee. But if we remain enthusiastic, remain faithful, remain patient, then it is guaranteed our mission will be a success. In fact, Srila Prabhupada said that Lord Chaitanya has predicted that this holy name is going to be spread throughout the world. So it's going to be done. The question is, will we participate? He said, nothing can stop our mission from outside. Only impurities and disunity amongst the devotees could stop our mission from expanding. Otherwise, if we're just doing what Krishna wants properly, if we're united, if we're tolerant, if we're enthusiastic, if we're faithful, if we're trying to be pure, then Krishna will empower. Nothing can stop us. That is the absolute truth. Actually, this little temple, Radha Gopinath, the origin of this temple is a very, very graphic illustration of this truth. Of how out of failure something wonderful can grow. when there's just a few devotees who are faithful and sincere and willing to continue on. There was like a few little orphans that took shelter of an orphanage. Yes, Srinath Prabhu. But somehow or other, everything was against it. Everything was against us. We had nothing going for us. And even amongst the people who were amongst us, there were so many rascal-type people. There was problems within, there was problems without. But just a couple people remained faithful, tried to be pure. And now there's so many thousands of happy devotees chanting and dancing. I just read a letter from one of our devotees, Chaitanya Ballabha Prabhu. He wrote a letter to me. And in the letter he says that when he first came to Radha Gopinath Temple, I think it was 1989, he said the Sunday feast program was between 20 and 30 people. And he said, now, Haribo, now we don't even know how many people. So a devotee never quits. A devotee doesn't simply continue on. In the material world, to be successful, you have to not quit. But in spiritual life, there's a whole nother dimension. A devotee will never quit. Why? Because a devotee has faith that simply by my efforts, Krishna will be pleased. And that effort in and of itself is victory over Maya. The fact that you don't give up, you are victorious over Maya. And when the particular results may come of victory, that is in Krishna's hands, but they will come without doubt. That is the lesson we learn from Dhruva Maharaj. But at the same time, when there is difficulty, it's not that devotees just say, oh, Krishna will do, so let Krishna do. We see all the demigods and Siddhaloka people and Vaishnavas, they're all praying. Alas, alas. Everyone's united. We have to get through this one for Krishna. So when there's a devotee going through difficulty or when there's a project going through difficulty, everybody should be very much concerned. They should be praying. They should be very much absorbed in the welfare of the Vaishnavas, of the mission of the Lord. And where is that spirit, there is Krishna's empowered blessings. Is there any questions?
We see that general devotees like us, aspiring devotees, that whenever everything is nice, then it is very easy to practice devotional service with great enthusiasm. But as you said, that real devotee is one who, with all the difficulties, continues to be faithful to Krishna. But whenever the problems are there, intense problem, we see that many of us give up our practice and lack faith in Krishna. So is it that Krishna is testing beyond our capacity or we are insincere?
Krishna never tests beyond our capacity. Because what is our capacity? Our capacity is to cry out to Krishna for shelter, then he helps us. That is our capacity as devotees, as Krishna's powers, Krishna's unlimited, inconceivable strength. If we actually take shelter, we have Krishna to support us. So for a devotee who surrenders to Krishna, his capacity is unlimited. But if we're not willing to surrender, if we make our decisions according to our own material conceptions, then we have an infinitesimal capacity, which will be trampled upon by Maya effortlessly. Does that answer your question? So yes, surrendering to Krishna is the test of our sincerity. Are we willing to be faithful? Are we willing to be loyal? Are we willing to continue on? That is a sign of our sincerity. Are we willing to take help from others? In a battle, soldiers are going to be killed. But if the living soldiers see that other soldiers are being killed and they think, I'm getting out of here, then they lose the war. Yes? But if the soldiers, however many around them are killed, they just keep working together to fight, then they can win the war. Yes? So we have to not be... We should feel very compassion and very concern when there's problems, so we have to deal with that in a mature, proper way. But we should never give up our faith or our dedication or our hope by any situation. Either when devotees are overcome by Maya, because devotees will be overcome by Maya. Prabhupada said, we're fighting a war against Maya. And some of our soldiers will fall. But our mission is when we remain united. And even those soldiers that are formed, that have fallen, they will be born again sometime and go back to Godhead. They just, some purification is required. But we have to move forward. We feel compassion, but we go on fighting together. Many obstacles will come. And you said when things are nice, then sometimes we become very comfortable and we don't surrender to Krishna so much. But I don't worry about that so much, because nothing in my life's experience, I have never seen anything remain nice for very long in this world. So don't worry about things being too nice. Huh? Do you have this experience? Something will come up. Smooth, just we're smooth sailing. We're on top of the world. We're riding high. But truth doesn't last. Some unexpected or expected crisis will come and just smash you. What are we going to do? How are we going to do it? Everything is about to be dissolved. And we have to regroup our forces, and we have to pray, and we have to surrender, and we have to deal with the mess. And then things become very nice. But how long will it last? This material world. Even when Krishna descends in this world, Vrindavan, Dham, is the replica of the spiritual world. The spiritual world has no problems, because people don't need problems there. Everything is transcendentally smooth forever, but within that smoothness, there's all kinds of rasas of excitement going on eternally. But in the material world, even Vrindavan, the acharyas describe that every single day some incredible demon would come to Vrindavan to attack. Giant bull. If just an ordinary, skinny, little Indian bull would come into this temple room, mad bull, what kind of a chaos would he create? Huh? Can you imagine if he was, if his the hump on his back was in the clouds? Aristasura, with one step, could crush your entire complex building you're living in. He was a big bull. He was a mystic yogi with all cities coming to attack. Kaliya. Hare Krishna. So the Brijavasis, everything was smooth, but then Krishna would send some demon, and what would they do? Krishna, Krishna, Mahabhavo. Krishna, save us. You're the only one. And then Krishna would save them. So we're in this world. And even if we make our temple into Vrindavan, still, Krishna's going to send some situation where Krishna, Krishna, Mahabhavo, save us, save us. Does that answer your question? Govinda Prabhu. Yes, Krishnanandaji Prabhu.
Maharaj, today in the lecture you are emphasizing how not to give up, keep trying, not to quit. But in practical projects or preaching areas, sometimes when devotees see that certain results are not manifested, we may think that we can better divert our energy in different ways, stop a particular program or start a new project.
That's not quitting. That's not quitting at all. We have to use our intelligence. We have certain... Just like sometimes in Mahabharata we find Bhima would be fighting with a bow and arrow. When he said that didn't work, he would pick up a club. Right? He didn't quit. He just changed the situation slightly. But the mission went on. Prabhupada went to Butler, Pennsylvania. That's where he started his preaching mission, in one sense. And he tried to preach there, but he saw that this is for my Guru Maharaj's mission. He discriminated. Certainly this place should be Krishna conscious. But people aren't taking to it here. So let me go to New York City. That will be a better place. So we shouldn't quit. If out of frustration because there's no results we quit, then that is a great loss. But with higher intelligence, we understand that the same energy and the same effort can have greater results for Krishna in another place. And we have the blessings of great souls to do so. Then that is not quitting. That is carrying on with discrimination. It's like Lord Chaitanya said, he was selling the fruits of love of God. So sometimes if you're a businessman goes to a certain place and he sees that the market is not good, he goes to another place. That doesn't mean he quit. That means he's... And eventually when he gets the capital, he may come back to that place. So we have to have discrimination in preaching. And we have to have superior guidance as well. Janani Vas Prabhu, he is an example of one who never quits. He went to Mayapur in 1971 or something like that. And Radha Madhav were in a little straw hut. And when Prabhupada was there, everything was nice. But then Prabhupada would leave. For practically a year at a time, he would be gone. And it was practically no senior devotees. Then the monsoons would come. And the monsoons, yes, it flooded the hut, right? And he'd just be up in some little place worshiping the deities. And there were all these venomous cobras floating in the water. He didn't quit. He could have easily come to some... He could have been a pujari in Los Angeles at New Dwarka. Very nice place. They would have welcomed him with open arms to be a head pujari. He could have gone to so many comfortable temples. But he remained there. Why? Because he knew Prabhupada wanted him there. He didn't quit. And then even after developing, there were such immense catastrophes that took place in Mayapur. Big leaders having serious difficulties. Sometimes the devotees were attacked by gangs of dacoits with weapons and bombs. And his brother, Pankajangari, actually had to take up weapons to fight back, even though he's just a totally gentle, non-violent pujari baba. Devotees got their legs blown off. Devotees killed. When you go to Mayapur now, it's like the spiritual world, is it not? Why is it like that? Because people like Janani Vas Prabhu did not quit. When it appeared the whole project was going to be taken over and destroyed by dacoits, when it was floods, when there was venomous snakes, when there was diseases, when everything was there, when there was whole political upheavals even within the compound of devotees, there were like civil wars and upheavals that took place due to certain deviations. Yes? But he just carried on his service with faith and love. And because of he, his brother, and a few others like that who just carried on, now there's millions of people that come to Mayapur every year to see and hear the glories of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, to worship Srila Prabhupada. Thank you very much. Janani Vas Prabhu ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.